Have you ever set up a beautiful approach, everything stabilized, and then watched the runway slide sideways under your nose like the airplane suddenly decided it didn't want to land where you did? If you have, welcome. You've met a crosswind, and you're not alone. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar, the show where we take the things that made you sweat as a student and break them down until they stop being scary. Today we're talking about the crosswind landing, specifically the wing low slip. The timing that makes it work, and the reason more check rides get bent right here, in the last 20 feet, than almost anywhere else in the pattern. Let's walk through this together. Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. And here's the thing about crosswind landings. The day it finally clicks, the day you grease one on in a gusty quartering wind and taxi in grinning. That's a milestone too. That deserves a coin. AviationSoul.com. Go mark the moments that matter, all right? Let's talk about why the wind is trying to ruin your landing. Here's the whole problem in one sentence. Your airplane flies through a body of air, and that body of air is moving over the ground. So when the wind is blowing across the runway, the airplane wants to travel with the air, which means it drifts sideways relative to the pavement. Your nose can be pointed perfectly straight down the runway centerline, and you will still slide off to the side like a crab walking down a beach. And that's the first method, actually. We call it the crab. You point the nose into the wind just enough that the airplane's path over the ground stays lined up with the centerline. From the cockpit, it feels strange because you're tracking straight down the runway while the nose is cocked off to one side. It works beautifully on the approach. The trouble is the touchdown. Because your wheels have to roll straight down the runway, if you touch down while the airplane is still crabbed, still pointed off to the side, those main tires hit the pavement moving sideways. Best case, you scare yourself. Worst case, you put a side load on the landing gear that the gear was never designed to take, and now you're explaining to a mechanic why the airplane is doing a little dance down the runway. So we need a way to arrive at the pavement with the nose straight and the drift killed. That's where the wing low slip comes in. And this is the method the examiner wants to see you fly on the private and commercial check ride. Let me tell you exactly what it is and why it works. The wing low method, sometimes called the side slip, does two jobs with two different controls. And here's the part that trips everybody up. Your hands and your feet are doing opposite things, and they're doing them for two completely separate reasons. Job 1, stop the drift. You do that with aileron, you lower the wing into the wind. If the wind is coming from your left, you roll a little left aileron in, dip that left wing down toward the wind. That bank creates a sideways component of lift that pushes the airplane back into the wind, exactly canceling the drift. Now you're tracking straight down the center line again, but this time you did it with bank instead of with a crab. Job 2, keep the nose straight, because the moment you bank the airplane, it wants to turn. A banked wing wants to go somewhere, but you don't want to turn. You want to land straight ahead. So you step on the opposite rudder, wind from the left, left aileron, right rudder. You use that rudder to hold the nose pointed straight down the runway. Say it with me, aileron controls the drift, rudder controls the nose, aileron for drift, rudder for the nose. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. Nobody could get it to stick in my head which way everything went, and I kept trying to memorize it like a formula. Left this, right that. Don't do that. Forget the formula. Just fly the airplane and watch two things out the window. Is the airplane drifting toward the edge of the runway? Add aileron until it stops. Is the nose crooked? Add rudder until it's straight. That's it. You're not solving an equation. You're correcting two errors independently, in real time, with two different feet and hands, until the airplane is doing what you want. And the beautiful thing is you don't need to nail it all at once from 1,000 feet. This is the second thing I wish someone had told me. You do not have to transition from crab to slip in one dramatic moment right before touchdown. You can fly the crab down final where it's comfortable and efficient, and then somewhere in the last 100 feet or so as you start the roundout, you smoothly transition. Lower the upwind wing, feed in the opposite rudder, and settle into the slip for the touchdown itself. Crab for the approach, slip for the landing. Both are legal. Both are in the airman certification standards. Use the one that serves you at the moment you're in. Let me give you a scenario, because this is where it gets real. You're on final at a runway with the wind coming out of the left at, say, 15 knots, gusting to 22, about 40 degrees off the runway heading. You come down the approach in a comfortable crab. Looks great. You start your roundout. Now you lower that left wing, feet in right rudder, and here's the moment. The airplane is now in a slip, upwind wing down, nose straight, drift killed. You let it settle. And because the left main is the low wing, that's the wheel that touches first. Left main, then the right main, then finally the nose wheel as the airplane slows. You do not fly it on flat. You do not chase a perfectly level touchdown. In a crosswind, the upwind wheel touching first is exactly correct. That's the airplane telling you your correction is working. Now the part everyone forgets? You're not done when the wheels are down. The wind does not quit blowing just because you're rolling. In fact, your controls get less effective as you slow down, so you have to keep adding correction. As you roll out and decelerate, you keep feeding in more and more aileron into the wind, until by the time you're at taxi speed, that aileron is deflected all the way to the stop. Full aileron into the wind. The old rule the examiner loves is climb into the wind, dive away from it, wind from ahead and to the side, turn the yoke toward it like you're climbing. Wind from behind and to the side, turn away. That's aileron discipline on the ground, and it's the difference between taxiing in normally and having a gust lift a wing on you. So, let's talk about the check ride, because that's why a lot of you are here. The examiner is looking for a few specific things, and knowing them takes some of the mystery out of the ride. First, the examiner is looking for a stabilized approach. Airspeed under control, on a reasonable glide path, configured, and tracking the center line. If you're all over the place on final, the landing that follows is a coin flip, and the examiner knows it. Second, the examiner is looking for that center line, not near the center line, on it, and staying on it. In the crosswind task, they want to see the airplane touch down on the center line, or within a defined distance of it, with the longitudinal axis, the nose aligned with and over the center line. Nose straight, no drift, that's the whole game. Third, and this is the one that surprises people, the examiner is looking for you to maintain crosswind correction during rollout and taxi, that aileron going to the stop as you slow down. If you land it beautifully, and then let the yoke go neutral while you roll out, you just showed the examiner you don't understand why you did what you did. Fly it all the way to the tie down. And here's the honest part. The single most common crosswind mistake, the one I've watched hundreds of times, is not too little correction. It's letting the airplane touch down while it's still drifting. Students get target fixated on the flare, on getting the airplane down, and they forget to kill the drift first. The airplane lands moving sideways and skips, or worse, that side load hits the gear. If you take one thing from today, take this. Kill the drift first. If the airplane is still moving sideways over the pavement, it is not ready to land, no matter how close the wheels are. Which leads to the most important skill in this entire discussion, and it's not a stick and rudder skill at all, it's the go-around. Let me be very clear about this. Every airplane has a demonstrated crosswind component. It's in your pilot's operating handbook, and it's important to understand what that number actually is. It is not a limit. It's the maximum crosswind the manufacturer's test pilot demonstrated during certification. A skilled pilot on a good day. It's a reference, not a promise about you in this airplane on this gusty afternoon at your experience level. So you set your own personal number and it's lower, especially when you're new. And when the wind exceeds it, or when you've set up twice and it just isn't coming together, you go around, you add power, you fly away, and you either try again or you go somewhere with a runway pointed more into the wind. There is no trophy for forcing a landing in a wind you're not ready for. The examiner would far rather see you make a smart go-around than salvage a bad landing. A go-around is not a failure, it's a decision, and it's the mark of a pilot who's actually in command. Here's the practical part you can use on your very next flight. If your airport has more than one runway, look at the wind and pick the one that gives you the smallest crosswind. Sounds obvious, but I've watched pilots dutifully use the calm wind runway out of habit, while a perfectly good into-the-wind runway sat right there. Second, go practice this in a wind you can handle, not the 20-knot day. Pick an 8 or 10-knot crosswind and go fly slips down the runway. You don't even have to land every time. Fly the length of the runway a few feet up in a stable slip, holding the center line with the nose straight, and feel how aileron kills drift and rudder holds the nose. Then go around and do it again. You'll learn more in a half hour of that than in a month of hoping the wind stays calm. And be patient with yourself, because this is genuinely one of the harder things we ask of a student pilot. You're coordinating two controls doing opposite jobs, in gusty air, close to the ground, at the exact moment everything feels the most urgent. If it takes you a while, that is completely normal. It took me a while, it takes almost everyone a while. The pilots who land beautifully in a crosswind today are just the ones who stuck with it long enough for their feet to figure it out. Your feet will figure it out. Trust the rudder. One last thought before I let you go. The crosswind landing is one of those skills that separates the pilot who only flies on perfect days from the pilot who can actually use the airplane. Weather doesn't always give you a runway pointed into the wind. The day you stop fearing the crosswind is the day the whole country of airports opens up to you. The numbers on demonstrated crosswind components come straight out of your aircraft's pilot's operating handbook. And the standards I mentioned come from the FAA's Airman Certification Standards, which you should be reading anyway if you've got a checkride coming. If you want more on any of this, we keep it all at radiohangar.com. Go find a manageable crosswind this week and fly some slips down the runway. Your future self, the one landing confidently on a gusty afternoon, will thank you. I'm Pattern. Keep that nose straight, and I'll see you next time.